The meeting will come to order. We have a quorum. Representative Benson, have you read the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move them.
The minutes have been moved. Is there any discussion of the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Let's see. Representative Olson has something in our packet. He's not here. So I will just tell you that Representative Olson, after our hearing yesterday, asked that he be able to provide you all with some information, and it is included in your packet. If you have questions, you can ask him about it. It's in the back of your first green folder. I have just a couple of announcements before we start. Gentlemen. The boys in the corner, I always have to keep my eye out over there. I have a couple of announcements before we start. And the first one is that next Tuesday's meeting will be in room 200. Don't ask me why, but we've just been given that word. And then the second one is about two excursions that we will be taking, and I want to give you the date so you can get them on your calendars. The first one is next Wednesday, the 14th. We will be going to Woodbury, and this will be during the day. We will try to fit it in as near as possible within our committee time, and your LAs will get the exact time, but it will be, we'll have to have some travel time, but not much more than the committee time. And I'm going to call on Representative Swales to tell us what we will be seeing in Woodbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to share my school district with you. We will be going to Royal Oaks Elementary, where a gifted and talented program, grades 4 through 6, is housed. And not too far away is another school, Bailey Elementary, where a Spanish immersion program is housed. Then we're just going to go and look at both of those types of schools and talk to the students and the teachers, seeing them in the classroom.
Thank you. And then on February 21st, which is a Wednesday in the evening, we will be going to Representative Faust's district. And Representative Faust, if you could give us a short preview of that.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We'll be going up to Hinckley School, where we will be viewing a program that SCRED, which is St. Croix River Education District, uses in their six schools, of which Hinckley is one of them. And it is a program not just for special ed, but actually to help the children stay off of special ed so that they get the help they need before they get to that point. And it's been very successful, and Commissioner Segrin talked about it a little bit, so it should be a good day.
Thank you. And that one is sort of related to today. And members, these will be the last trips we will be able to take this year, because we're going to have a very tight schedule to get in all of our bills that we have. I have had a couple of other members who have suggested other places we could go. One of them was Representative McFarland to visit an intermediate school district, which she is interested in, and a lot of us are interested in. And we've made other arrangements where she's actually going to be getting for us a videotape. So when we have that hearing, we can see some of that, hopefully, and it will be hopefully as good as maybe not as good as, but it will substitute for a visit. Representative Detmer invited us to his district, and you know, we're not going to be able, as I explained to him, to take any more trips other than the ones we have scheduled this year. But we always try to take visits in the fall. Sometimes we go that we have next year. So hopefully we'll have lots of opportunities for places to go. And then Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And sometime we'll have to take you out to Lake Wobegon, nationally acclaimed weather, Lake Wobegon, where the children are all above average.
There you go.
But no, my question has to do with Wednesday. What time? Do we have a time period?
Thank you. That's a very good question, and we'll be emailing that exact time. I'm going to ask Shannon Patrick if we have an exact time yet or not. Do you have a microphone?
Here, get you on the mic.
We haven't had her talk before, so she has to find her bike.
Well, we're looking
Are you asking about the 21st?
Okay.
Wednesday. Are you asking about
Wednesday,
the 14th?
What time? Yeah.
Wednesday the 14th.
Okay, Wednesday the 14th, what time? Are we going to be taking off in the morning, afternoon?
No, it would be the afternoon, roughly around our committee time.
Oh, okay. And getting back, you have any idea?
Roughly around the end of our committee time.
Okay.
So.
Hi, Representative Heiger, and I guess I told you all that we do know. She doesn't have any more details than I do. Usually she does, but this time she didn't yet. But it will be emailed around to all of your LAs, so it will be able to get on your calendar. But we did plan a little bit longer of a trip, but the leadership told us not to infringe upon anyone else's committee, so we're going to have a shorter trip. Okay, well, we will now go to our bills, or not quite to the bills. We're going to have a little bit of briefing on special education before we go to bills on special education. We have to try to understand all these issues and the ramifications of how much special ed costs and what it means to school districts when the federal government doesn't fund it and the state government doesn't fund it. So we can't just point fingers at the federal government. We can also point fingers at ourselves. Of course, it would help if they would do their part to make us look better, but we have responsibilities here as well. So we're going to start with Dr. Tom Melcher from the Department of Education, and he has brought with us, I understand, some hot off the press information that we might even be the first ones to see. I'm not sure. Dr. Melcher, welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tom Melcher, and I'm the Director of Finance at the Department of Education. I did bring with me two reports. They're the 2005 Special Education Cross-Subsidy Reports that essentially show what the difference is between the expenditures for special education and the amount of revenue that's generated by special education students and services. And what I would like to do is to walk through the single page kind of statewide total piece first and then go into the district by district runs. I thought it might be helpful to share with you a little bit of background information on how we calculate the cross-subsidy and then talk about some of the distributional impacts. So this one-page report on special education cross-subsidies from fiscal year 1999 through 2005 shows you what the trend is in the cross-subsidies. And in order to calculate those, we start with the top section of the report, which shows the special education expenditures, and these are all dollars and millions. And if we just focus on the very far right-hand column, that's showing you the fiscal year 2005 numbers. And so the information that we use to calculate the cross-subsidies includes the state-funded special education costs, excluding transportation, and fringe benefits are currently excluded as well from our formula. And that's about $819 million for fiscal 05. We approximate the state fringe benefits. Currently, school districts do not report those separately to us because they are not a part of our state special education funding formula. And so what we do is we look at the ratio of salaries to fringe benefits for staff that are funded with federal dollars, and we assume that that same ratio will apply. And so given the salaries of $819 million, the fringe benefits would be approximately $189 million for its special education staff. Then we have transportation, and this is for those students which require some special transportation services. That's about $118 million. We also have a portion of the special education costs that are funded with federal education aid, and that portion is $152 million currently. So you can see the federal aid is quite a bit smaller than the state portion. And then we have tuition expenditures for school districts when they get billed by charter schools or by other school districts. That's also an expense of the special education program. And that comes to about $28 million in fiscal 05. So the total is about $1.3 billion for the total expenditures relating to special education. And you can see on line 1G what the trend is, and I believe Mr. Crow also had included a chart with these same figures, which shows that the rate of growth was 6% last year, and it's ranged from about 8% to about 4.4% each year over the last several years in terms of the expenditures. The next section, part two, is showing the revenue sources. And you can see that for fiscal 05, we had about $521 million of state special education aid, including the aid for pupil transportation. We had about $91 million of excess cost aid. We had a small amount of what we call special pupil aid, and those are essentially for wards of the state, students for whom we don't have a resident district identified, about $2.7 million. There's a very small amount for home-based travel aid. In fiscal 05, at that time, we had a state cost subsidy aid, which was a temporary provision, which was $11 million that year. School districts are receiving dollars from third-party billing. These are for students that are getting medical services that are relating to special education, and they're able to collect some reimbursements from the Department of Human Services or from private insurance providers, and that's coming to about $14 million. Federal aid, about $153 million. And tuition that they receive, because they provide services to other school districts, about $21 million. So overall, the revenues that are directly categorical for special education were about $816 million. And of that, you can see the state aid and levy was covering about 48% of the expenditures. The federal aid was covering about 12% of the expenditures. And overall, the categorical funding was covering about 62.5% of the expenditures. The third section of the report is the general education revenue attributable to special education students. Students with disabilities earn general education revenue the same as other students. For purposes of these calculations, we show the amount of general education revenue earned by special education students for the time that they receive special education in two different ways. Line 3A is showing that the total amount of revenue generated by these students was about $163 million. We also show an alternative calculation where we only count the revenue generated by students who were served more than 60% of the time outside of the regular classroom. And there are a couple of lines of research on this nationally, and we've looked at it different ways in Minnesota. And the reason for using the calculation in line 3B, only including the general education aid for those students who are primarily outside of the regular classroom, is that a school district can't necessarily save any dollars if a student is pulled out of the classroom for an hour. You still have to have a certain kind of a staffing ratio, and if a student left the regular classroom for an hour for a specialized service, the district probably can't increase the class size to factor that in. So for some of our calculations, we use only the general education revenue that was generated by students who were primarily outside of the regular classroom and figuring out how much of the general ed revenue is really attributable to special education as opposed to general education services. So given those three pieces of data, the expenditures, the categorical revenues, and the general education revenue associated with the special education students, we're now ready to calculate the cross-subsidy. And the gross cross-subsidy on line 4A is just the difference between the expenditure and the categorical revenue. So that's about $490 million in fiscal year 2005. What we call the net cross-subsidy is the gross cross-subsidy minus the total amount of revenue, general education revenue, that special education students earn for all of their time. So that would be based on the concept of the money's following the kid, whether they're outside of the classroom for a half an hour for a speech service or whether they're outside of the classroom for the entire day. And so that using that approach, we get a cross-subsidy of about $327 million. And the third calculation is the adjusted net cross-subsidy. And there we take the gross cross-subsidy and subtract off only the general education revenue for students who are more than 60% outside of the regular classroom. And that line, the $416 million, is the primary line that we use. And the reason we use that is it reflects the assumptions that are made in state law as it relates to our tuition billing system. Our tuition billing system assumes that as we look at the revenue available to support a kid, that we're not going to take the money out of the regular classroom for those students who are only pulled out of the regular classroom for a portion of the day. So in order to align the cross-subsidy calculations with our state statute on special ed tuition billing, we think the best measure to use is the adjusted cross-subsidy, which you can see is about $416 million in fiscal 05 and has grown, as you can see, over the years. Madam Chair, with that background, I'd like to then turn to the other document that I have, which is the district-by-district breakdown of that $416 million. And the calculation on this sheet is just a little bit different from the other sheet. In the summary, the state total summary sheet, we include federal revenue and federal expenditures. And they're pretty much a wash. In other words, the school district gets money from the federal government. They're reimbursed 100% of certain expenditures with that. So it's pretty much a wash. Because a lot of the federal revenue is paid to cooperatives as opposed to individual school districts, we have a difficult time trying to break down the amount of the federal aid and federal expenditure on an individual school district basis. And so for the purpose of our district-by-district cross-subsidy, we show the amounts excluding the federal aid. And really, that's going to give us an accurate picture because the federal aid and the federal cost are pretty much one and the same, so it doesn't distort the picture in terms of the net amount the district has to take out of the general fund to cover unfunded special education costs.
Thank you. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you. Going back just to what you just stated, Dr. Melcher, very good job. It's very complex, but the billing situation, is that one of the reasons that compilation is that the state has taken over the billing now because of some inequities from one district to another? It's mm-hmm. It's easier, I would assume, doing it this way now.
Dr.
But it's created some, I know it's created some issues. I know Representative Earl's district, for example, Litchfield, I think, came up $200,000 short. And it creates, you know, that problem. But has it been working pretty good with the state taking over the billing?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerten, the department is in the process of taking over that billing system. It's not completed yet. We believe that it will result in a more fair and uniform allocation of the tuition bills among the school districts. We have encountered a number of situations where the data that had been used previously for tuition billing was not always accurate or uniform, and we also had already been collecting about 95% of the data needed for tuition billing as a byproduct of the special education aid calculation. So the thinking was that it would make the process a lot more uniform and straightforward, treat all districts the same, and also that it would reduce by quite a bit the amount of time and energy that school districts needed to put into this. Now, in the short term, however, as a result of the transition and converting systems, there may be some additional costs in the short term, and there are some changes that have occurred. And I know I've met with Representative Verdahl as well, and we've looked at the Litchfield situation, and there are a variety of things going on there, including some pretty significant changes in the numbers and characteristics of students that are going out of the district and coming into the district. But we will see some shifts as a result of the change in the system, which is the department is currently implementing. In fact, we implemented at the beginning of this year for the charter schools that had high concentrations of special education students and co-ops as well. And we're implementing statewide on the February 15th aid payment to school districts. So you may be seeing more in the way of responses from districts as they see this implemented this year.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I look at your first sheet of information, I see that in 99, the total special education expenditures was $917 million. In 2005, it's expected to be $1.3 billion, an increase of about $400 million, or approximately 45% increase over those 6 years. Do you have any idea why we've had such a significant increase in that? Is it more unfunded mandates or mandates? Is it increase in the number of students receiving services? Do you have any feel for what that increase is due to?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Foss, it's a very good question, and we have, in fact, had increases in the numbers of of students receiving special education services, even though our total enrollment throughout the state has decreased over the years on a gradual basis, the number of students with disabilities has increased, and I just pulled out some data here. We had 106,545 students aged 3 to 21 with disabilities in 1998-99, and this year we have 117,528. So a portion of that increase would be due to the additional students that are being served. We also are finding some increases in certain disability categories, such as autism, where there are more students being served in certain categories that are relatively high expenditure categories. And then special education costs are growing for the same reasons that other costs are growing. Teacher salary growth, certainly transportation as a result of energy cost increases, and so forth.
And we have to remember, when we looked at the governor's budget, a 2% increase each year is only going to slow the rate of growth by half. But before we cast aspersions on that proposal, we have to see what proposal we're coming up with. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, is the reason why we're seeing 2005 as the last number for special education cross subsidies because the two-year lag?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, no, it's 2005 is the last year that we have finalized. 2006, we are relatively close to having final data. We're still getting corrections on late tuition bills among school districts. School districts have until the end of December to finalize their data for the fiscal year. So theoretically, they had until December 31st to get all of the information in for the 05-06 school year. However, there are delays where some school districts are a little behind in terms of getting all of the information reported to the department. There are quite often, with some of these tuition bills that come up, there are issues that that need to be resolved. Sometimes the resident district isn't aware that they had a student that was being served, and they need to work that out between the two districts. And so it's really not related to the two-year lag as much as it is just the difficulty in closing out all of the year-end data.
Thank you.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some clarification before we go into these bills. We can state at about 117,000 students within special ed. Now, and that's figuring all 14 components, all 14 categories?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerken, yes, this is all of the students aged 3 to 21. It would exclude the Part C.
Okay. What percent statewide? Where were we at? About 13%?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerken, I believe that's about okay. Where we're at, yes.
By statute, I think we set aside $529 million. Is that inclusive of the excess cost aid? Is that in that $529 that we have in statute? Is that?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerken, no, the excess cost aid is on top of the regular state special education aid.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions for Dr. Melcher before we go to Mr. Cox? Pardon me. Representative Dominguez.
Dr. Melcher, could you tell me in your third-party billing, what does that consist of? Is that mental health issue, health? What is that?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, the third-party billing is for students that have medical conditions that are things such as physical therapy, occupational therapy, nursing services. Mental health services would be included in that. Those are issues that are for students with disabilities that are in those particular areas. Quite often those services are reimbursable through medical assistance or private insurers, and the school districts do get some reimbursement for those expenses from those providers as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Melcher. Oh, sorry. One last question, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this real brief. This is probably more a policy question eventually, but Dr. Melcher, do you know what year K-12 enrollments have actually been going down overall in the state? Do you know offhand of what year our K-12 enrollment spiked and started its present downward trend.
Dr. Melcher.
Oh, Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, Tim Strom probably has a tip of his tongue. I believe it was around 2000, but I might, and it's been kind of waffling where, you know, the numbers have actually gone up and down a little bit in the last few years. So we've had some decline, but we may have had a decline of, you know, 0.2% 1 year and then up a little bit the next year.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, what I'm talking about is overall enrollment, not necessarily enrollment in, or students prescribed into this category.
And actually, Representative Mariani, we are going to Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom next. So if that's the question, we can start with that when we get to them. And thank you, Dr. Melcher, very much for your very, as always, excellent presentation and information.
And Madam Chair, if I could just add that we
please.
Do also have the district-by-district reports that show the impact on each district.
Right, and people should be looking at the column, the second from the right. Is that right?
The second column from the right would show the total amount of the adjusted net cross subsidy, and then the very far right column would show the amount per pupil unit.
Thank you very much, which is a fair way sometimes to actually see the impact on some districts. Okay, Miss, I'm not even going to guess who's first this time. I'll just call on whoever starts talking. Paper, scissor. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, you have in your packet a set of five charts related to special ed, and I'll just flip through them quickly. Mr. Melcher has covered most of the substance of what's in these charts. We just thought this might be a nice way for you to kind of see what's happened to special education and the subsidy of special education expenditures from the general fund over time. So if you look at the first chart, you can see that it says special education revenues and expenditures on the top. The gray bar is expenditures. The black bar is revenue. So you can see that expenditures have risen fairly rapidly between 1999 and 2005. Revenue has grown but has not grown as quickly over the seven-year period as expenditures have. And that you can see in the next chart, which is a line graph of what the actual cross subsidy is. And again, there's the gross net and adjusted net cross subsidy, and the third one, the adjusted net, is the darker line in the middle. And you can see that what's happened to that line over time and the dollar amount of that subsidy. And then we've included did I skip one? No, what's your third one? Oh, okay. The third one, as Representative Heidgerken mentioned, there is a statewide cap on special ed funding on both the regular and excess cost formulas, and due to that cap, an adjustment factor is applied to the allocation or to the formula to actually send the money out to the school districts. And this kind of shows the proration amount the amount that's funded because of those caps. And you can see that over time we're funding, because of those caps being built in, we're funding less and less of actual expenditures in school districts over time because of those caps that are in place and the absence of growth factors on those spending caps. And actually, let's skip one. This one was supposed to be with the other ones, but the overall impact of the caps on all special ed expenditures is the last chart you have, and that kind of goes with the last one. You can see that we went from 91% of funding down to 74%. And then the fourth chart in your packet is one that just shows you how year to year how special education expenditures have changed over time, and that's where Mr. Melcher mentioned that they range from annual increases of around 4.5% to over 8% per year of growth in special education expenditures. You can see that it's not real steady, but it ranges kind of around that 6% on average increase over the time period.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Crow? All right. And one, the asking about how many more, oh, one more. Postscript, okay. Mr. Croft.
Madam Chair and members, I neglected to mention we've also included in your packet a district-by-district printout of special education increases from the governor's 2% per year increase on the growth factors. And so you can see it says special education funding, governor's proposal versus base funding, FY 08 and 09 in the upper left-hand corner. You can see in that, for example, if you take a district like Aiken in the first line, they have a under current law, it shows their base regular access and transition disabled, which is rolled into regular in the governor's proposal, special ed funding. And then you see that the governor's proposal, and I note at the bottom that regular includes the roll-in of transition disabled with a 2% increase, and special ed access. You can see on a statewide average, let's just go to the statewide average line, that's a $14 per pupil increase or a 2% increase, which makes sense with the 2% adjustment on the growth factors. But what we thought would be interesting for you all to note is that when you put 2% of growth factors onto the special education funding, it doesn't mean 2% increase for each district. Because the statewide cap is increased by 2%, the money is allocated among districts based on what their expenditures are. So that's why you see, as you look down the row, that districts won't don't uniformly have 2% increases. And we thought that might be enlightening for you all as you consider where you're going to put additional funding.
Thank you very much. And that answered a question that I had earlier looking at that chart. I was just going to add, in terms of how many more students will we have for special ed, the Environmental Finance Committee has been talking with me, the chair of that committee, and saying that this committee should be interested in what their committee does or does not do, because there's been more and more articles and evidence and research that shows that environmental pollution does have an effect on children getting some of the brain disorders like autism and mental illness. So, you know, I think that was, she was trying to tell me they needed some of the money. We should not get all of it because what they do impacts our costs. Okay, well now we will go, unless we have questions for Mr. Kroll, we will go to the bills. And the first one, oh, we did have a question. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just when I'm doing the district runs, and I think we all do that, I just have, when you look at the districts, they're pretty uniform. They're not that that off base, but you look at 110 Waconia, what's special about what's going on there?
Mr. Kroll, but first, Representative Heidgerken, that was my question, but when I listened carefully to what he said, I didn't have to ask it, but we'll let him answer it for you.
Guilty.
Mr. Kroll, could you repeat your answer?
Well, actually, there is a unique circumstance that if you look at Waconia's line, they're for all of you, they're School District 110, about the sixth from the bottom on the first page. And what's happening there is, if you look in that fourth number column from the left, the $263 per pupil, that's their transition for disabled students revenue. And for whatever reason, and I don't personally know what's happening in Waconia, that they have the high number in that particular category, but you can see at the top the average is $9 per pupil, so they have way more than the average, and that amount gets inflated by 2%. So the allocation is, you know, kind of driven toward them in that category because of the growth in that, or because of the size of their funding in that category. And I think if you looked and found somebody else that had if you just look three lines up, you see the ESCO School District has $30 per pupil in that category, and they have a higher than average percent increase. It's smaller because it's 3.2, but you can see that particular category is not everyone's around the average, and maybe Mr. Melcher can add to this, but that.
So, Representative Heidgerken, I guess the whole answer wasn't in what he said earlier, and so it's a good thing you asked to follow up, and Dr. Melcher wants to add to that answer.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The governor's recommendation, in addition to the 2% increases each year, would combine the caps for the special education regular category and the vocational transition disabled category. And it would also make the transition disabled program eligible for special education excess cost aid. Currently, both parts of this program, and they're all part of the overall special education umbrella, both of these start off with a 68% of salary formula. Mm-hmm. However, the proration factor is lower on the regular special ed account because the growth has been faster, and so they both had some cap increases, but the regular special education piece gets prorated more, so you start off with a little bit higher rate of reimbursement on this one, but then the transition disabled is not currently qualifying for excess cost aid, so when you net all of that out, you're actually getting a lower rate of reimbursement on the transition disabled right now than you are on the regular special ed. And the governor's idea here was to simplify the funding formula a little bit by providing the same amount of reimbursement for both the regular special ed and the transition disabled, instead of having the two separate categories with one being included in excess cost and one not. And Waconia, because they have such a high amount for transition disabled, kind of stands out like a sore thumb on that.
Okay. Oh, Dr. Melcher, Mr. Crow wants things that would help us to understand this better if we know if Waconia is a fiscal host for special education services.
Madam Chair, you know, I'm not sure. I don't
okay.
know.
All right. Thank you very much. And members, I've always noticed Dr. Melcher, every year he's always trying to help us simplify our school funding formulas, and I don't know how we end up where we are when he's always simplifying. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for Mr. Crow. Mr. Crow, looking at your chart on special ed revenue and expenditures, right now the federal government in fiscal year 05 reimbursed, looks at the figure, about $153 million. This is on Mr. Melcher's chart, special education categorical revenues line H.
Mr.
My question is, if the federal government under IDEA was meeting its 40% obligation, would we double that amount to $300 million in reimbursement by the federal government for special education costs?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, talking really slow because we had handed out that 40% chart earlier this session, and I just want to get the exact figure for you, and I'm not finding it quickly, but
17. Oh, you got it.
So we'd get an additional $236 million if they fully funded the 40%.
An additional $236 million.
That's correct.
So we would still be short, Mr. Crow, even if the federal government met its 40% obligation.
Yes, that's correct, Representative Moore.
Good. Thank you.
Good point. Okay, now we have three bills, and we want to leave time for and each of the bill authors has brought some witnesses. We want to leave time for public testimony as well. So I'd like each presenter and testifiers to try to stay within 10 minutes. And the first bill is Representative Morgan, who is a member of this committee, so he can move his own bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Representative Will Morgan, and I'd like to move House File 649 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill.
Representative Morgan moves House File 649 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. And please proceed and introduce us as well to your witness.
Thank you very much, members. This is Dr. Ben Cannon, who is the superintendent of the Burnsville Egan Savage School District 191. He'll be helping me provide a little local color, if you will, to how special education cost increases have affected our school district. But, of course, many of you could go home and hear the same story from your superintendents as well. I'm also going to ask to call on Mr. Strom to help to describe the particular technical aspects of how my bill will affect the specifics in the formula. But just a little background first. When we started back in January, I knew that my district and many others were suffering from special education cross subsidy. And so I went to Mr. Strom and I asked him, what are some options on ways we can address this issue and start to solve the problem? And he presented several issues, several ideas to me, and we took a look at them. And the one that I decided would help all districts and perhaps provide a little extra help to the districts that are most suffering from the special education cross subsidy does what my bill does. And that is, first of all, it removes the caps that have been placed on the special education funding, and then it increases the reimbursement level from 75% to 90% in the excess cost aid. Now, exactly how that's going to work out and fit in, I would like to call on Mr. Strom now to point out some of those details and perhaps give a little background on the caps and so forth and how this will help.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, to be as brief as possible, if you go back to the printout that you've got in front of you, the district-by-district printout, and you look at the third column in, which is called the Special Education Excess Cost Category, that category came into play essentially when we capped regular special education funding. And the idea was, with regular funding capped, excess cost would pick up the difference. Well, not long after that, a few years after that was created, the excess cost formula was also capped. Both the regular and the excess cost formulas had inflation factors in them called program growth factors, and the idea was these would grow the base amounts as necessary to keep up with the increasing costs. In 2003, the legislature eliminated those growth factors, and the caps are in place now. The growth factors have been eliminated. So if you focus on what Representative Morgan's bill does in the third column, which is the excess cost category, two things happen here, the first of which is this category of funding is uncapped. And if you go back to Mr. Crow's charts, you can see from the third chart in that group called Special Education Funding, Statewide Funding Proration to the Caps, for 2008 on the black bar, you can see that for excess cost, we're only paying 44% of the amount we'd be paying if it were uncapped. So essentially, by uncapping the excess cost, those amounts in that third column increased by an additional 56%. So the first part of your bill increases those amounts in that column by 56%. And then the second part increases the way the excess cost formula works. Each district needs to spend a certain amount out of its general fund, 4.3% of its regular general education revenue, and then the excess cost formula funds 75% of the difference. And House File 649 pushes that funding formula up to 90% of the difference. So the districts would all still have to support special education with 4.36% of their general education revenue, but then amounts above that, 90% of them would be uncapped and fully funded. So that the net total cost of your proposal is about $175 million. Mm-hmm. And for members who want to get a sense of how big that be, if you look at that third column in, and you can take that and increase it by about the combination of those two, about 60-some percent larger is where the end result of that would be.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom. I'd like to turn now to my friend and superintendent and sometimes boss, Dr. Ben Cannon, to talk a little bit about the impact of the cross-subsidy problem as it applies to the Burnsville-Lincoln-Savage School District.
Superintendent Cannon, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ben Cannon, Superintendent of Schools in Burnsville, Egan Savage, 191. I want to thank the Chair and the committee members for inviting me here today. Representative Morgan, as he's indicated, asked me to spend just a couple of minutes providing you with a local perspective to try and translate, I think, some of what you have been hearing about a statewide impact into one local school district. My guess is that the display that I have, and I think you have copies of it in front of you, would be very similar for a great many other districts. Special education is a very important service. It is a mandated service, but it is a necessary and required service as well. And it does have costs associated with it that have been described prior to my testimony. It's interesting to note before I begin that this is also a very important issue on the AMSD platform as well this year, so I suspect you'll be hearing about this issue from a number of perspectives. If I could turn briefly to the sheet before you, I'd just like to review some of the numbers for our district. First, if you look at the 2005-2006 special education revenues, there I've broken them out for you from last year in the categories that you've heard testified about in the last minute or two. And you can see as a total for our district, we received $13.6 million in special education aid from the various categories, state categorical, the excess cost formula, from federal aid, tuition billing, and the medical assistance reimbursements that you've heard described for you. Under expenditures, if you look in the middle of the page, I've given you 3 years of expenditures for our school district, 2003-04 to the present. You'll notice that expenditures have risen from $18.7 million to last year's $21.1 million. I was doing some figuring as I was listening to the various reporters, and that amounts to about 6 or 7% increase in each of those years, which comports with what's going on at the state level. I was also thinking in terms of our overall budget growth for the general fund in our district, and during that same period of time, our general fund growth has been approximately 2% per year. So you can see that special education is an important cost driver in our school district. The cross-subsidy, and based on the definitions that Dr. Melcher provided for you, this cross-subsidy that I've listed here would be a gross cross-subsidy, and it is risen from $4.8 million 3 years ago to $7.5 million in the most recent year. And I also indicated a third column there for you, which would give you an indication of the percent that gross subsidy represents. That is, of our expenditures, 74.3% were covered 3 years ago. Last year, 64.5%. That would also comport with what you heard recently, which is that the amount being provided to support special education, regardless of how you calculate it, is declining relative to the cost. Finally, I thought it would be interesting to look at some history. And in our school district, if you go back to 1992, our special education revenues in that year were approximately $7.7 million. Our special education expenditures from those same categories that you see listed above were $7.5 million. I think I have those reversed. Yes, I do. They're reversed. The cross subsidy was $0.2 million or $200,000. And nearly 100% in that year of the gross cross subsidy was funded. And you can so the point of, I'm trying to make with the display is that the cost of providing special education services is increasing. The costs for our district are increasing approximately as they are in districts statewide, and that growth is much faster than the overall growth, both in what's provided to support special ed and also in what's provided to support the general fund in its entirety.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Dr. Cannonan? Okay. Representative Morgan, I don't know if you have any concluding statements, but we have Representative Erickson. But there are two people who want to specifically testify to your bill that we're going to take next. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Greiling. Superintendent, in the Burnsville-Egan-Savage system, do you recall in which grade levels you have more or less special education students? You know, do you identify more at the 3-5 level, and then do they continue to stay in special ed, or are there more? Do you have that available?
Superintendent Cannonan.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think that the early identification occurs typically, sometimes prior to when they enter school, and those identifications tend to grow some as students progress through the grades, but the percentage of students identified in, say, the kindergarten, first, and second grade tends to remain approximately that same percentage throughout.
Madam Chair?
Representative Erickson.
And Superintendent, are you at about 12% or higher?
Superintendent Cannonan.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think we are at about 12%.
Thank you.
Representative Demmer, and then we will go to the witnesses or the testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I can't help but, as Superintendent, I can't help but look at, in 1992, expenditures about $7.5 million. In 2003 and four, a little over 10 years, you got about 2.5 times the expenditure. Can you give us just a quick outline, very briefly, where's the additional cost coming from? Why has it gone up so rapidly? Is it more staff, more kids?
Dr. Kennedy.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I think I'd give an answer very similar to the one that Dr. Melcher gave. A couple of things have happened. The number of students, that is the percentage of students that we are dealing with relative to our population, is approximately the same. Mm. But the mix of students with whom we are dealing has changed. There once was a time when the largest category was LD, which is the least expensive category. Mm-hmm. But the numbers in some of the more expensive categories in recent years have dramatically increased. It was mentioned earlier that autism as a diagnosis is increasing, and that has been very much the case in our school district. And the costs associated with that program and on a per pupil basis are many times what they are, say, for an LD student. So aside from the general growth in the cost of providing services, which would apply everywhere, we don't have more students, but we have students identified with more costly disabilities.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kennedy. We will, if Representative Morgan, if you could stay right there, and we will take the next two testifiers, and then you could give your concluding statements. Ms. Allschweiger and Ms. Hedberg, if you could come forward. Welcome to the committee. I don't know which one of you is going to go first. Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Diane Hedberg.
Welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify today. I am a special education resource teacher at Seward School. It's a K-8 Minneapolis public school. I have special ed license in learning disabilities and behavior disorders, EBD. I work with students with learning disabilities, behavior disorders, autism spectrum disorder, other health disability, and there have been a few MMMR, mild to moderate mentally handicapped. I'm a resource teacher. That means small groups of students are supposed to come to me. I work with them for typically 30 to 60 minutes a day, sometimes 2 hours a day. It depends on the individual education plan of each student. I teach them how to read, writing skills, how to do math, and how to get along socially. And special education is intended to be highly specialized instruction. To have highly specialized instruction, you need small groups. That's crucial to special education being effective and for students succeeding. When the mandates are not fully funded, caseloads of special education teachers such as myself are quite high, and we are unable to have small groups and to specialize. So if my students are to make progress, that's very important. Another point I'd like to make is that general education suffers when special education is not fully funded. The regular education teachers are already in classrooms with too many children. They are unable to attend to the special education students' needs without the support of someone like me. It's when I have a large caseload, I can't give the attention that I need to the classroom teachers, and it prevents them from being able to be as effective as they're capable of being with adapting the curriculum, with behavior. Mobility is another point I'd like to make. In Minneapolis, we have a lot of students that come into our schools and then either move to other schools or to other parts of the state, other parts within the district or outside of the district. So our caseload for a teacher such as myself is supposed to be around 23, which makes specialized instruction very difficult. But one special education teacher in a highly mobile school may see 35 different children. that come in and out. Assessment is a point I'd like to talk about. It takes a lot of time away from instruction when we do not have a sufficient number of special ed teachers in a school. A lot of our time is spent testing, either evaluating a student that may possibly qualify for special education services. That's typically about 10 hours per student. Also, state and district testing takes about 4 weeks away from instruction. So a concern that we have with less of us, with fewer special education teachers, we still have to do testing, lots of testing, and it takes away from what we're really supposed to be doing. These problems are not unique to the Minneapolis Public Schools. I've had a lot of reading trainings and college courses where I've talked to other teachers in different districts. My own children, my older children, have attended the Roseville area schools, and I know that other special education teachers, resource teachers, and other areas in the district have similar concerns in the state. Does anyone have any questions?
I think we'll take the next testifier first, because we want to make sure we have the same time for the other two bills. Thank you very much, Ms. Hedlund. I noticed that Roseville area schools, and you got your son in the back there who came with you to learn about government, right?
Yes, my son attends the school at which I teach, so it's
wonderful. Thank you very much. Ms. Allswiger, please state your name and welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. And as I've traveled around the state and talked to teachers and educators in rural, suburban, and urban Minnesota, this really is a big issue. As the previous testifier stated, the caseloads for our teachers in special education, whether it be speech, SLD, EBD, any of the programs, the caseloads have just skyrocketed. And as a result, because of the lack of funding, it, as you've been hearing all day today, it eats into the general education revenue. When you have an increase in your caseload, and I think Ms. Hedberg has done a nice job outlining some of these, you have more testing to do, leaving less direct instruction for the students. You have less preparation time in terms of giving the time for every individual student. You have to divide all the number of parents that you have to communicate with by a larger number, meaning you have less time to communicate with each parent. So there are a number of issues that happen, or ramifications that happen as a result of having large caseloads. The bottom line is that we're not doing a service, the best service, for our special education students that we could. And we would support all of the special ed bills that are before you, and we do hope that you will make special education a priority as you look forward, as you look to putting your education bill together, because it will also help with the general education revenue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So you're supporting all the bills here today.
Yes.
Very good. Okay, thanks a lot. Representative Morgan, closing comments.
Just briefly, let me wrap this up, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. I did ask Mr. Strom to give me an estimate of what it would cost to fully fund all unreimbursed special ed costs, and the number he gave me, and this was based on before the forecast, was somewhere in the area of $1.2 billion. Clearly this is a step in the right direction, but it's not going to do everything we can, but I would urge your support of this bill, because it will help districts serve special education students better and get more money into the regular classroom that we intend to go there in the first place. So thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much.
Madam Chair, just really quickly, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, is that an annual or biennial number?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. That's a biennial number, yes.
Thank you very much, Representative Hillstrom. That we're laying over all the bills from yesterday and today for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Yeah. Representative Hillstrom, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 786 be recommended or be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Hillstrom moves that House File 786 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And you're already on the committee, but welcome to the witness table, and please introduce your guests and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be brief and allow my guests to speak mostly. House File 786 reestablishes the growth factor for special education. It sets them at 5% for regular special ed formula and 10% for the excess cost of special ed. Now, the one piece that makes this bill different is it also sets up an intensive intervention services for students, and it allows school districts to be eligible for 50% reimbursement of staff costs if they do set up the program. With me today, I will start with the superintendent of the Brooklyn Center School District. Many of you have heard me speak about the school district. We're having difficulty passing an excess or an operating levy. We've tried four times, and he's going to talk about the impact special ed has had on our budget. Mr. Lester.
Welcome, Mr. Lester. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Keith Lester, and I'm superintendent of schools in Brooklyn Center. And my voice doesn't always sound like this. So. Let me start by saying that we're a kind of a unique district in that we're only two buildings. We're 2.8 square miles. And I like to think, with all of the marvelous things that we're accomplishing, and we're still an SOD, that we're kind of like the little engine that could. But sometimes the cars behind us are a little heavier than they need to be, and I think this is an example of one of them. If you look in the cross subsidies for 2004-2005, you'll see that ours was $829,000. We weren't that far in statutory operating debt in 2004-2005. Last year, our audit shows a deficit of $1.2 million, and our special ed revenue went down $300,000. Our special ed expenditures went up $200,000, or did I reverse that? It's $500,000 between the two. And it's hard when you're digging yourself out of a hole and know that you have these high costs that you have to deal with, too. I've never begrudge the special ed students what they need. As a matter of fact, I've been a pretty strong proponent of it. But the costs are going, as you've heard today, going way out of line for us. You've heard many of the examples that I might have given you, so there's no point in giving a lot of those. But another example of increasing costs are the number of high need students that we're getting moving into our district. They're not the LD as Representative Morgan referred. They're coming in at much higher needs. To send a high-needs behavioral student to Intermediate District 287 costs us about $43,000 a year for one student. We currently have 12 students there, so, you know, the old expression, you do the math, it's a big expense, and we have several in several other areas. The needs are great for OT and PT and all of those too, and then you combine some of the growing areas such as autism. We certainly, I believe, and I know the district does too, believes that if we were funded so that we could deal with these students before they got into the special ed category, that, you know, obviously we wouldn't have as much of this problem. And maybe most significantly is these kids with all of their needs are, I just lost my train of thought, I am sorry. Yeah, it was really important.
We all know that feeling, what
yeah.
Can us laugh?
If I think of it, thank you, Madam Chair, if I think of it later, I'll try to get back to it, thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Representative Hillstrom. Please state your name and welcome.
My name is Bruce Seal. I'm the Director of Special Services for Brooklyn Center Schools. Special services include special education. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. One of the many current issues facing us is the issue of education students with risk factors and students with low performance and with students with disabilities. For years, since the start of federal funding for special education, the education system has seen federal special ed money as a way of providing services to students with education needs. When special ed became good at finding students with disabilities, general ed became good at referring students to special ed. By stating that students with needs should go to where the funding is, which is what special ed is, we're faced with a growing special ed population and a concern that some students will not have their needs met unless they can be placed in special ed. We also have issues with federal funding of special education services. As an experienced special ed professional and administrator, I support special ed for students with disabilities. I also strongly support the need for special ed to serve students only with disabilities and do not want special ed to be a place for students who have educational needs, whose needs could be met by general ed if general ed had improved funding. I strongly support this bill, House File 786, for several reasons. First, the number of special ed students and funding of services can be reduced by providing early interventions in general ed prior to referral and prior to assessment of students for disabilities. By supporting general ed students who experience low performance or failure, we can teach to their needs early on. We can monitor their progress, and we can see growth by using general education strategies that have proven to be successful. Second, the process of referring and assessing and qualifying a student as a student with a disability is based on disability features of the student and should not be based on inadequate funding in a general ed setting. Generally, once a student is placed in special ed, they're there for a long time, and that's because a disability is generally a long-term condition. By finding funding that will enable a district to teach a student with low performance issues, the school will be able to keep special ed growth to a minimum, increase the frequency of informing a family how their child will be taught, and decrease the number of families who have to hear that their child is a child with a disability. This bill also offers intensive intervention revenue equal to 50% of the salary costs and is devoted to spending this funding on students who are likely to need special ed services if nothing is done to intervene. Education is the essential piece. Interventions are extra. Interventions are shorter lived than placement in special ed. Funding for interventions will result in a decrease in referrals to special education and a decrease in the number of students in special ed. Funding interventions will result in general ed supporting public school students who bring risk factors to school that contribute to low performance and are not disabled. And last, schools know that we have students who are at risk of not succeeding, and Mr. Lester brought that to your attention already. We face many of these factors, and we categorize them as risk factors in education. And the current PS Minnesota proposal offers an idea of looking at a new way of weighting adjustments at risk factors that might be interpreted as students who are at risk for not graduating. I think this is worth your consideration, as it would allow general education students who show risk factors to bring funding to assist their education, assist their success, and reserve the need for special education for those students with disabilities.
Thank you, Mr. Seal. Representative Hillstrom.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denny Ulmer, and I'm the executive director of the Bemidji Regional Interdistrict Council, which is a large special education services cooperative out of what has most certainly been the last week or so, Bemidji. And my wife and I live in Park Rapids. We live, eat, sleep special education. She's the autism specialist for the Park Rapids area school where we live. I've been a special ed teacher, a building principal, and for the last 20 years a special education administrator in Minnesota. It's fun to be back in this chair. Representative Greiling, we worked closely with you back in 99, 2001 when I was MACE president, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. Our president, Mary Rupert, had another conflict, and our legislative chair is home with the flu. They knew I was motivated to come down here where it is a little bit warmer than it is currently in Bemidji, so here I am. I wanted to speak to a couple things. Quickly, specifically in this bill, I certainly could speak to everything that's been said here previously, but I'm very excited that special education funding is once again on the radar screen and that you're all motivated to address it. It has grown into a huge problem, unfortunately. And I ask myself why, and if we look back to what we did in 99 and 2000, we did a lot with then Representative Kelso and your colleague, Representative Segrin, and then Education Chair in the Senate, Senator Pogemiller, who came up with the cross-subsidy notion and we worked on, and all those things, but we really haven't done much since. So it's exciting to see that we're motivated as a state and as citizens and as parents and as educators, et cetera, to do something. And certainly this is a great start. I would bring your attention, though, in this bill, in the subdivision intensive intervention program goals, I think this is a great start and it really hits on early intervention and trying to prevent special education, which is not bad, but it's high-cost, labor-intensive. Special education programs are high-cost, labor-intensive programs. And if we can prevent a child's needs from becoming that, we want to do that and try to save some monies. There currently is a statute, Minnesota 125A.50, which was developed in 1991 for that purpose. And I was at the department this morning at a meeting and got some data on that. There are currently, in 2006, there were 28 applications for that use of state special education funding waiver to use that money to try to prevent special education occurring in districts. 16 of those were renewals, 12 of them were new applicants, 25 were approved by the commissioner. 22 of those programs target intensive remedial reading, for lack of a better term, in the early elementary grades. 3 of those programs, one of which is ours, out of our office in Bemidji, and we serve 11 primary districts. We serve a total of 44 school districts in northwest Minnesota through some regional projects. Our program is called the School Home Interventionist. We work connecting the problems in the home with goals in the school and success in the school. But is a very similar type of intended program already on this statute, which I think we need to look at as well, and how that interfaces with the intensive intervention program. But Representative, I think this is right on target, and this is the right direction to head.
Thank you, Mr. Ulmer. It's good to see you again. Representative Hilstrom, any closing comments? You've got about 30 seconds of your time left.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I just hope that members will be open. I think that it is smart money to invest early and keep children out of the special ed system if at all possible, and I think this is a good start. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so very much. And members, I'm sorry we're going to have to hold questions until we hear Representative Haas's bill because we have limited time left. Representative Haas is coming up. Representative Haas, welcome to the committee. Do you want me to move your bill, or did you ask a member to do it?
I did not. Please do so, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes, I move House File 778 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I'm here with my guests from the school district, and I'll talk fast and allow them to give us some special knowledge into special ed and cross subsidies. When we're talking about the Lake Wobegon Trail in Lake Wobegon, I was kind of dreaming that I was in an area where all students were above average and all children were above average, but that is a dream. And there's many areas where that's not true. And there's about 30 areas that are feeling a real, real pressure, although all school districts have problems with special ed unfunded and underfunded mandates. But there's 30 school districts that are absolutely being choked off by decreasing populations and increasing special ed populations. We had some deficits that I passed out, a sheet that I passed out for you in 204. We noticed that we have a 2.1 state decreasing enrollment from 201 to 205 and a special ed increase in enrollment of 4.9, and during that process we had 24% increase in the average cost of a special ed student. We see in St. Cloud in that 204 we have a $6.4 million special ed deficit. I put a $500 across subsidy in, although I know the real that we need is $350, but $350 breaks the bank. Now, does $500 do enough for us? That is why I brought my experts to talk about this and talk about cost subsidy. And at this time, I would introduce Dr. Watkins, our superintendent.
Dr. Watkins, welcome to the committee. Please state your full name and title for the record.
Bruce Watkins, superintendent of schools, St. Cloud Area Schools, District 742.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Chair Greiling, Representative Haas, committee members, on behalf of St. Cloud Area Schools and all schools like those you've been hearing from, struggling with the special ed cross subsidy, thank you for your consideration of this and other bills seeking remedy. First of all, I was glad that you had the primer to start out with, because we have approached people on occasion and they say, what is the cross subsidy? And we've come up with a simple answer, And as we say, if you take all of your special ed expenses and then subtract all of your special ed revenue sources, you're left with quite a large number. In our district, it's approaching $8 million. That is a number that we then take out of the general fund. And we pay for the services mandated and required. And in Minnesota, we are mandated and required to provide services over and above what the federal government requires. So it is no small task to provide those services and no small dollar amount to come up with the cross-subsidy. The bill before you would provide partial relief. Representative Hawes is right that 500 is a starting point. There are other more desirable places to end. It's partial relief for those districts, especially for those whose special ed excess costs are greater than the average district. But any district's cross-subsidy costs reduces that district's ability to maintain all of their other educational programs, K-12, all programs funded by the general fund. I think of great interest this legislative session will also be any relationship to property tax and or property tax relief. And there is a direct relationship here that I would like to talk about. The special ed cross subsidy is directly related to property taxation. There are 340 school districts in the state of Minnesota. 300 of those have needed to enact operating levies. In the worst case scenarios, the special ed cross subsidy is now surpassing the total amount of the operating levy. In other words, all dollar amounts generated by the operating levy are consumed, plus other general fund dollars are consumed by the special ed cross subsidy. It goes immediately to satisfying the expenses that you've been hearing about. During the last two legislative sessions, you're aware that special ed financing has remained frozen. But with the state's proration of that frozen amount, districts are actually receiving less dollars. For those districts in declining enrollment, you may be aware, and maybe not, that a part of the formula bases it on your total number of students. So if you've lost the total number of students, not IEP students, but total number, you've also suffered an additional decline. Over the last 4 years, our district has lost $1.1 million in state revenues. It's actually eaten up the increase that we'd received from a federal revenue. Any district that serves as a regional center has another significant problem. And when I say regional center, you will see districts on that cross-subsidy list who are in their geographic area some of the only major health care providers, hospital or public health systems, public housing or government services. They may be the only area that people can live or reside in that have mass transit, have a significant concentration of poverty, concentration of ELL, or extensive youth services for special ed students. That serves as an attractor, not intentionally, but by design. If you have a medically fragile child, you will not locate 30 miles north of a small town without a hospital. You will locate in a center that can provide the necessary services for your child. You will find districts on the cross-subsidy list whose regional center makes them virtually a magnet for special ed students and expenses. We received today and appreciated being able to view Tom Melcher's information that was handed out. And so earlier today you received state total special ed cross-subsidies. And in the middle columns, or in the middle area, it says special ed categorical revenues. I draw your attention to the last 4 years, or the 3 years, 03, 04, 05. And it's on this document that you received earlier. Notice that under lines A and B, state regular special ed, including transportation, state excess costs. Please note the declining balances and amounts that have been sent out. Line C, an eliminated amount for levy equalization, And finally, you'll say, well, there are some offsetting things. If you go to line G and H, there are increases. That's the third-party billing. That's not a state source. And also, the federal amount had been an increase. Line M then tells the story that says, of all the expenditures that you're having on top that are growing, the percent of reimbursement is decreasing. That's the problem that we're facing. Included in a packet that I asked to be distributed for our testimony, you will find on page 7 a document that just shows, and it's by example, what a regional center draws or attracts in comparison to the area around it. And so I show you a St. Cloud school district, its percent of special ed in comparison to a Sauk Rapids, Sartell, Cold Spring, Ricori, so for your information. We appreciate so much your attention to this urgent need, and look forward to working on solutions with you.
Thank you, Dr. Watkins, and I hope Representative Haas can pronounce our next witness's name and
he's
help
Irish.
Out. He's Irish.
Yes. Oh, how do we pronounce your name?
Welcome to the committee, and we'll be listening carefully.
Thank you for having me, Madam Chair,
Kevin,
committee members. My name is Kevin Genishaski.
See, that's Irish.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Genishaski.
Thank you. I would just like to point out the last page of the handout, which is really the comparison that Mr. Melcher handed out for the statewide. This is really St. Cloud's individual comparison as it would be towards Mr. Melcher's. We kind of turned it around. We put revenues on the top and then expenditures on the bottom. But as you can see, in the first year, the 03-04 year, we had a cross-subsidy deficit expenditures over the revenues of approximately $5 million. The current year that we're in of the 06-07 school year, that has risen to the $8.2 million. So because of the items that my superintendent, Mr. Watkins, and others have stated today, that is what the flat funding has done individually to St. Cloud School District. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for any of the testifiers that are here? Or Representative Haas, any closing statements?
Thank you for the opportunity to close. Again, I've sent a bill here for $500 cross subsidy. 350 is probably a magic number that works a lot better. I would assume that I do not want to amend it. I want to leave it up to your committee to work things out with what you can afford. But we are really in a fix with unfunded and underfunded mandates. The regional centers are very hurt. Areas where you have declining populations and increasing special needs populations. You're going to find about 30 of those in the state. I would ask you to prioritize. I would ask you to solve this problem as a main concern of our school district. I think it should be a main concern of the state of Minnesota. Innovation, creation, but certainly political courage. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And like yesterday with all-day kindergarten, we now have members a variety of options on the table. And we will be having another day with special education because there are members who have bills coming up that aren't in. So in 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have another day. And then members of the audience and groups that did not sign up that we didn't have time for today, we will have more opportunities for testimony in general.
We appreciate you, Madam Chair, and we appreciate the committee and all the litany of great ideas. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. We have like 2 minutes left, so I think I am not going to ask for any testimony. We've gotten in everybody who signed up. So do any members have any just general questions? Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, just perhaps a suggestion for a future committee hearing regarding special education, that I think we keep hearing about the explosion or the growth in the special education population, and it might be helpful for myself and other members of the committee to understand what are the factors that are causing this increase in the population rather than simply increasing appropriations for those categories, things such as breakdown of the family, environmental factors. What are the things that are driving these increases? I would suspect many of those things would be outside the prerogative of this committee, but I think it would still be important for members to understand that.
Thank you, Representative Graffler. I think that's an important question. And one thing that I know, you know, this will be a continuing problem. I'm sure that we're not going to be able to, you know, fix it all this year, as most of the bill authors have mentioned. But we will, through Representative Dominguez's committee, be working together with the Environment Committee at some point, not during the session because we're kind of locked into bills that we have right now. But we will be looking at some of the underlying causes and trying to get ahead of the curve. And perhaps next hearing we could hear more from somebody, though, for this year to answer your question. And with the last minute we have left, Representative Olson, I did announce that your information was in the packet, but if you want to take about 30 seconds to tell members what it is, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How about 5 seconds? I appreciate your announcement, and I just want to encourage members to take a look at it. Appreciate the good hearing on kindergarten options yesterday. This is remarkable information in here, and I just want to encourage members to really take a serious look at it.
Appreciate you bringing it to us. And members, the meeting's adjourned. See you next week.